Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. A big old Tuesday show coming up for you with an awesome guest. Bridget Todd returns. Bridget, how's it going?
Good. I'm so excited to be here again. It's been way too long.
It has been a long time. I hope that we have some good times ahead, some good news. I think we have a little bit of light news. I tried, but anyway, it has been a bit since you've been on. You are, of course, the host of a podcast. Tell us a little bit about what you've been talking about recently.
Yes, I am the host of iHeartRadio's podcast, There Are No Girls on the Internet. And we've been having all kinds of fun conversations about all things tech, things like disinformation, propaganda, media manipulation. It's a lot more fun than it sounds. I realize that description made it sound very dark, but truly it's about how the internet functions in all of our lives and how it can be used for both a tool for good and a tool for bad. So a lot of the same kind of conversations y'all are having here at Young Turks.
That's awesome. Yes. I don't remember the last time we had a talk about how it can be used for good necessarily. I'm sure there's gotta be something though. So everyone head over to There Are No Girls on the Internet and you can find out what the good side of all of this is. But anyway, thank you for being here. Thank you everybody that's out there watching, regardless of what platform you're on. We appreciate you being here as well. And if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream so that people know we're live, that would be awesome. As we go through this, we're gonna be taking a few breaks. And during those, we'll be responding to your questions, super chats, concerns, all of that. If you wanna send in messages, wanna start off by welcoming new YouTube member at tier 2, Derek Graham, the Penguin Dragon. Thank you for being a member. At tier 2, you get access to the weekly top 10 list that Francesca Fiorentini and myself do. This week, we had a request from a viewer to talk about, they wanted us to take stock of our lives and go through our top 10 time sinks, things that we spent, like not like work and stuff like that, but stuff that we probably put too much time into. And we did, and I am now horrified at the state of my life. So thank you to the viewer, Zuna2, who suggested that. Anyway, with that, Bridget, you ready to do this thing?
Let's do it.
Okay, everyone, hold on to your butts. It's gonna start off kind of dark. Dr. Fauci is back with another prediction about when things might be back to normal. Take a look.
That if we can get through this winter and get really the majority, overwhelming majority of the 90 million people who have not been vaccinated, I hope we could start to get some good control in the spring of 2022. I didn't mean the fall, I misspoke, my bad.
Okay, so he had been asked about like his previous comment that the fall of 22 would be the time, and that was his bad. He just meant the spring, but that's still really bad, I feel like. Like we're launching towards 2 full years, Bridget. And I have a lot of little tidbits of news about how things are going and everything, but it's been a bit since we talked about this. And during the interim, we're launching into another wave, at least in certain parts of the country. So what do you think about what Dr. Fauci had to say there?
I mean, I respect the fact that he gives it to us straight, you know, that he misspoke and it's looking more like spring 22. It's a lot to take in. I mean, this sounds so kind of quaint now, but I still remember back in the day when I was like, oh, this is gonna be 3 months tops, you know, like that was the longest I could conceptualize, you know, lockdowns and all of this. And spring 2022, I mean, that's a lot. That's not nothing.
Yeah. And like when, you know, I think when we were early on, I originally thought it'd be like 2 weeks or whatever. And when we started to think about, oh my God, maybe this will last a really long time, that for me at least, I think for a lot of people was pre-vaccine. And so it was, what can come to save us? But now it's like, no, we have everything that we need. We're very lucky as a country that we bought up like the whole world's supply of vaccines, refused to give it to other countries. And so they're here and we just like can't convince people to actually take them. So I don't know, in some ways it's a little bit darker. Like we individually might be better protected, you know, with vaccines and stuff like that. But as a country, we're just looking out there and seeing not just continued suffering and death, which is horrible, but what makes it worse is that it's even more needless than it was before. And then that continues to this day.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's almost kind of, it's kind of a darker story when you start to pick it apart that we have what we need. Other countries would really, really benefit from having these vaccines. We just can't get people to take them. We can't get shots in arms. And so it is a little bit disappointing when you think about it that way.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, look, I want to catch people up a little bit on some of what's going on with the pandemic. So let's see. We got fun stuff like Hawaii's lieutenant governor, who is an ER doctor, says that that they're getting calls. Josh Green is getting calls about ivermectin, even over in Hawaii. So that's fun. The sheep dewormer. Hawaii, by the way, is asking for tourists to stop coming because they don't want COVID imported, which is sort of understandable, I suppose. We had a little milestone hit in Florida. Florida is apparently now the first US state where the daily average deaths over 1 week from COVID are now higher than they were in all of the past waves. So over the past month or so, we've gone through cases going up, and that's scary. And then hospitalizations going up, but there was always that hope that the deaths would not do what they always do, follow 2 to 4 weeks later. At least in Florida, they are. They're now averaging more than 200 deaths a day. But never forget that Ron DeSantis won the pandemic. So that's fun. Let's see. Do I have any good news? Well, three Houston area emergency rooms have closed due to the COVID surge. That's not good news. There is a little bit of good news, but again, it's sort of a regional thing. The cases in New York City are now decreasing. The percent positive is heading down. In California and in LA in particular, we're now seeing that as well. So there is a little bit of good news, Bridget, but again, it tends to be certain areas. Like if you're in Mississippi, if you're in Florida, if you're in Texas, it is still very dark times.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm grateful to have a little bit of good news where we can find it, but honestly, my heart really goes out to the people of Florida who their elected officials have just abandoned them. You know, I read a poll that said that the majority of folks in Florida actually want mask mandates. They don't want to continue to politicizing COVID protocols because it's caused so much death and harm in their state. And it just seems like they have been abandoned by their leaders. And it's really, my heart goes out to them because it's really causing them such distress.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. And again, we have all the tools that we need. We'll just see. Will we do it? Oh, by the way, I want to give an update on this because I don't know, Bridget, have you seen the comments that have been now twice now? The lieutenant governor of Texas is they've moved on from just the only reason we have COVID is because of undocumented immigrants to saying that Black Americans won't get vaccinated, so they're responsible. So I wanted to just give people accurate information. So overall, across all adults, 69% say they've gotten the vaccine, 13% saying they will not take the vaccine. Black Americans were the racial group most likely to say they've been vaccinated at 76%, Latinos at 71%, white people at 66%. So there's a 10-point gap between Black Americans and white Americans. I don't know if the lieutenant governor or any of the other senior political leadership of Texas is watching. Just wanted to make sure that they had some accurate facts there.
Yes, thank you so much for correcting the record. And I think it really speaks to how we've allowed our leaders to manipulate data and numbers, how they've allowed to kind of make Black and brown folks the face of vaccine hesitancy when that's just not the case, and how convenient it is for them to have this scapegoat, you know, to get up on a podium and say like, oh, it's Black folks, it's brown folks, just completely flies in the face of the actual data. So thank you for correcting the record, and I hope that folks in that state are watching so they can actually get some accurate information.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, anyone trying to pull that move obviously sucks. But I mean, I guess at least in theory, if you wanted everyone to get vaccinated, like I get the impulse to attack groups that won't vaccinate. Maybe I would say be accurate if you're gonna do it. But if you are like one of the leaders of a movement that is like apologizing for all the right wingers that don't wanna get vaccinated, is grifting off of vaccine hesitancy, then no, you don't get to like point one finger while shielding all these other people that would prefer sheep dewormer. That doesn't make sense.
Absolutely. You don't get to blame Black and brown folks for not taking the vaccine one day and then the next day go on TV and downplay the effectiveness of vaccines. You cannot have it both ways, and that's what these people want.
Exactly. And look, overall, I would say we should try to be understanding. I go back and forth. I get frustrated. I'm a human. I've lost family to this. So I get frustrated. And sometimes maybe the ways I try to reach out aren't necessarily the most productive, but we should try to be understanding. And I want people to keep that in mind as we get into some of the videos I'm about to play for you, because it is going to be difficult to be understanding when you face some of the nonsense we're about to see. Apologies in advance. We are going to go into territory that we do not often talk about on this show, but there is a point to it. So, Donald Trump, just a few days ago, encouraged people to get vaccinated. We showed you that video on the show yesterday. He was almost immediately booed. So you will be shocked to find out that the reception overall has not been that positive. So I want to start with those who are closest to him, at least ideologically, even though he would never get within 100 yards of them. That would be his base. So we have some video from, is it Donny O'Sullivan, Sophie? Sophie's a big stand for Donny O'Sullivan of CNN. He went to the rally and he spoke to some of the supporters of Donald Trump. And here's what they had to say about the vaccine.
Not getting that vaccine. No, 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 no. Them vaccines are not good, huh?
Are you vaccinated?
No, but I have a lot of hydrochloroquine and zinc in my house.
So have you got your vaccine shot?
Nope, don't want it.
No? Wait.
They ain't tested it enough, from my opinion.
Yeah. The Pfizer shot is about to get full FDA approval. Would that change your opinion on it at all?
Not until they do a whole lot more investigating in on it.
Yeah.
Nothing's going in me until then.
Right. Do you think that would take a long time?
About 10 years or so.
Trump got the vaccine, though.
Yeah, they keep saying that. I don't know that. I mean, I'm not fully convinced of that.
You don't think Trump
I don't think he did. Yeah. I really don't. I think it is his time where God is separating the sheep from the goats.
What are you?
I am a I'm a goat because I ain't a sheep. I'm not doing what they tell me to do.
Bridget, are you a goat or are you a sheep? How does this break down for all of us? What am I? I don't want them to say, because I'm sure it'd be derogatory. But
it's kind of funny that these are some of the same folks who are actively taking livestock medication. So it's kind of funny to say, like, I'm not a sheep, but
I know. I'm more of a pony. So the medicine's a little bit closer to my genetic makeup. I don't know some of the points. And look, I understand that if you are going to a Trump rally, you are the core of the core of the base. Fully understand that those people are not gonna take it. It is still frustrating, of course, to hear things like, I don't believe he took the vaccine, when he's telling you. She said, they say he's taken the vaccine. No, he said it, not they, he. You trust him and he said he took it, they don't believe it. Or that they haven't done enough testing, but they'll take the zinc and the hydroxychloroquine and the ivermectin and stuff like that, which does not even, that doesn't even have the emergency authorization, the treatment, everything. So yeah, some of the talking points remain pretty frustrating. And look, I understand it might seem as if we're making fun of them, and maybe in some ways we are, but I feel for those people. I don't want people who go to this rally to end up dying. I want them to be safe, and we're trying to reach them. It's just very difficult, Bridget.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the fact that his, one of his big supporters is like, I don't think he got vaccinated, I don't know that. I think when you have someone who is a liar and a demagogue like Trump, it doesn't surprise me that this person cannot trust what he says because he lies. And this is what happens when you let this kind of, you know, political demagoguery and lies into the bloodstream. People don't know what to believe. People don't know what to trust. People don't know how to feel or what's real and what's not. And this is why these kinds of lies that Trump traffics in are so dangerous. And these people, it's easy to be frustrated at them, and I am as well, but like, they have been really dangerously misled.
Yeah, they have. And that's the biggest thing. It's that it's the people they trust, the people they support, that are leading them astray. And I have an example of that. An example of someone in the media, kind of, who has a great reputation, I'm told, by Donald Trump, regrettably. We are going to be temporarily breaking our ban of playing videos of this person, because I think understanding the line in a political movement is important. What line will they not cross for you? Donald Trump is at least sort of implying that you should get vaccinated. Come with me to the vaccine, and they are not taking it. And so here is Alex Jones's response to what Donald Trump said.
We got to take him to the woodshed, though, because he came out last week on Fox and Friends and said, I really am suspicious of this booster shot. If this supposedly works so well, why do I need a booster shot? Because you got lied to, Trump. It didn't have 98% efficacy. We knew day one it wouldn't work, period. It's a fraud. It'll create mutants. You got chumped. You got signed on to a fraud to restart the economy. I understand why you did it. You believe in science. Except these are bad actors, sir. You believed America could produce a good vaccine. Of course they could have. They didn't want to. They didn't create a vaccine. They created a Frankenstein. CNN snaps their fingers. Jeff Zucker snaps his fingers and Trump clicks his heels and hops up there at attention and says, how high do you want me to jump, boss? On you, Trump. Seriously. Hey, if you don't have the good sense to save yourself and your political career, that's okay. At least you're going to get some good Republicans elected. And, you know, we like you, but my God, maybe you're not that bright. Maybe Trump's actually a dumbass.
So that, I mean, look, he's crazy. I know, I've looked into his eyes. It is a swirling vortex of insanity, but he's been a big supporter of Donald Trump. He just called him a dumbass. He said, shame on you. And all it was him saying, here's a vaccine I developed or whatever, you know, give me credit. It's a Trump vaccine. I want you to take it so you don't die. That's the thing that they won't turn on. That's the thing that finally made them question his intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, it's a death cult. You know, these people are so committed to these lies that they've been peddling. And I guess I go back and forth of whether or not I think that Alex Jones truly believes the nonsense that he peddles. But it's this is what it is. I mean, there is no line. I guess like this is the line. Trump gently saying maybe people should get vaccinated. It's not like he, you know, went hard for vaccines, just gently saying like I got vaccinated, maybe you all should too. That like that is enough for somebody like Alex Jones to completely turn on Trump. Like it really, it's really something.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, he wasn't ordering them. He wasn't saying like I want you to take off your red hat if you don't get vaccinated. He wasn't doing anything like that. It was so middling, his endorsement of it. Now look, if you're watching that and you're frustrated, you don't care about what Alex Jones thinks, good, you're still a sane human. But there is a point to this. And it's really that we have these two different groups. You have the core who not only are not, there's not anything coming down the pike that's gonna convince them. The authorization isn't gonna convince them. Donald Trump's personal endorsement isn't gonna convince them. Even at a rally, him saying it isn't gonna convince them. However, that does not mean that all of this is pointless. There's no point in talking about, there's no point in trying to convince people. I get messages from viewers all the time that say that they've finally gotten through to a family member and they're gonna get vaccinated. And overall, I want to now contrast the country's arc with those crazies. So what is actually happening with vaccinations? Well, not nearly enough, but if we look at how quickly shots are going into arms, providers are now administering about 854,000 doses per day on average over the past week or so, which is a significant 75% decrease from the peak of 3.838 million back on April 13th. But if we could bring up this graphic, you'll see that it is trending up over the past month or so. Not nearly, if we can go back to the previous one, you're gonna see the trend on a daily basis. Not nearly enough, it is still too slow, but it has gone up a couple of 100,000 doses per day. And as I always say, I have no idea what is leading to that. If it's the news media focusing on it, if it's Fauci getting out there, if it's the authorization, or if it's just, oh God, people all around me are getting COVID, I should take this seriously. But it is going up, and to whatever extent we can make that stronger, that is important. That will save lives. What are your thoughts, Bridget?
I mean, I think you're exactly right. I think it's really, I mean, in my community, it's been talking to my loved ones and talking to people who have questions. I wanna be clear, I think that we've got two groups we're talking about. People who are never gonna get vaccinated no matter what, okay, fine. Then you have people who have questions or hesitant. And I think that we've been doing a lot of good work, really working on that second group. I know that in my family and my community, I have a lot of folks who, you know, aren't anti-vaccine. They've got some questions. And so I think that the reason why we're seeing this trend upward slowly, but you know, it's still going in the right direction, is people doing a lot of that work in their communities, answering questions, offering to give somebody a ride to a clinic to get vaccinated. All of that stuff, like if you're somebody in your community who's been doing that, keep it up, because I do think it's really making a good difference.
I think it is. And you know, like we should hope that everybody gets vaccinated, but we can start with the people around us, the people we maybe have the best chance for, the people we have the closest attachment to. I think that that is a great idea. By the way, just briefly, can we go to this second chart? This is going to break down the rise in the individual manufacturers. Man, that bad news killed J&J like we thought that it would. It has been just trending down and down and down. Initially, it shot up because, hey, one shot and you get a whole bunch of protection, but it just hasn't recovered. Moderna's up a little bit. It seems to be mostly Pfizer, and that's probably going to become even stronger now that that has actually received the full approval. But it is depressing that they developed this one shot vaccine, and man, has a product ever been killed as quick as that, unfortunately. Anyway, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to be changing gears, talking about evictions as well as things like Prop 22, Uber and Lyft and all of that, the fight to get those gig workers to actually have some rights. We're going to be talking about those after this. Okay, everybody, let me remind you of a few things before we jump back in the news. First of all, it is a Tuesday, which means not only is Indisputable coming up right after the damage report, but Adrian Lawrence will be joining Rashad Ritchie as co-host. Carrie Sheffield will be joining them for debate as well. So that should be a lot of fun. A reminder, it's now one day post our tier three Q&A, but we had a lot of fun. Everybody who's a tier three member on YouTube, we're hanging out, talking about a whole bunch of stuff. That video has now been posted. So if you're watching this and you're thinking about becoming a tier three member at some point, the past Q&As are available. Obviously, they won't be live at that point, but still fun. We have some fun conversations. Anyway, with that, Bridget, you ready to talk about some news?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. We are still in the so-called eviction moratorium that's going to last for a little bit more than another 5 or 6 weeks. But there are a lot of issues there, and we don't know how long it will actually in the end last. So I want to go through a couple different aspects of this, because despite the fact that we got this eviction moratorium, that very much does not mean that people are not being evicted. And it very much does not mean that you can expect that it's going to last into the beginning part of October, as has been sort of previewed. We will have to see. But right now, the Biden administration just yesterday urged the Supreme Court to leave in place a moratorium on evictions in parts of the country ravaged by the coronavirus pandemic, saying it's a lawful and urgently needed response to an unprecedented public emergency. How urgent? Well, as of right now, according to the US Census Bureau, about 6.5 million renter households are behind on rent. And I will remind you, the eviction moratorium doesn't necessarily do anything about that. It provides a bit of a buffer where you, in theory, can't be thrown out, although we'll return to that point, where perhaps you can get money together to clear that debt. And there is some aid out there. In part, the eviction moratorium is supposed to buy time for states and localities to distribute that aid, but it is not just clearing all of this rent. And so, as has happened several times in the past, even if we get to the October 2nd deadline, I believe it is, October 2nd, October 3rd, we could still end up with millions, perhaps even more millions of American households that are behind on their rent and will then be evicted. And so, we don't even know if we have that long, because right now a coalition of landlords and real estate trade groups in Alabama and Georgia are challenging the latest moratorium. And we'll get to some of the calculations about the Supreme Court. But Bridget, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, it really is heartbreaking. I think something about this issue is that we talk about it in these sort of wonky policy heavy terms, but we're talking about families, some of which, a lot of which have kids. And if you've ever been evicted before, that means if you get evicted, every single time you try to rent an apartment after that, there's a little box in the form that you check out that says, have you ever been evicted before? And now you have to check yes. And so it is something that will follow you around for such a long time and really derail the trajectory of your life. And so it's not just a policy issue. This is people's actual lives, families actually, actual ability to, you know, provide for themselves and support themselves and have a little bit of stability. And so I really want to encourage everyone to think about the issue in that way, that it's not just about policy. It's about families' ability to provide for their loved ones.
I'm so glad that you pointed it out, because it is one of those things that, yeah, could follow you for the rest of your life. And look, having that follow you at any point that's a very questionable thing that I'm sure a lot of good debates are going on about whether that should even exist. But in particular, if you're being evicted during the worst domestic crisis in the last century here in the United States, sort of feel like there should be some sort of understanding that you should be cleared from having that follow you. Billy points out emergency unemployment is about to end as well, which yeah, it's insult to injury. It's more injury on top of injury. And these are crises that are going to intersect. People are losing access to a little bit of the limited extra money they were getting, thus exacerbating the problem with actually paying your rent. Now, here's the thing. Again, we don't know if it's going to go into when the CDC initially announced it for, because back in June, the Supreme Court justices on a narrow vote left a previous version of the eviction ban in place when it was supposed to expire at the end of July. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who cast the deciding vote, said he thought the ban should be allowed to wind down. But he added that he believed CDC lacked authority and that congressional action would be needed to impose a new moratorium. And it was the CDC, by the way, that ended up extending it. The CDC extended it for most renters until early October. But despite growing concerns about COVID's Delta variant, protections for renters have still been eroded. The previous moratorium had covered the entire country. This time it only covers parts of the country with substantial or high rates of community transmission. Well, the joke's on them because America's not doing anything about the pandemic either. So that's everywhere, basically. It's not, but it's a lot of territory. It's sort of a silver lining on all of that. And so there is a very real concern that Brett Kavanaugh, who previously sided with continuing the moratorium before, might not, because now it's the CDC that did it. And we already know he doesn't like that. And he seemed to have a waning interest in continuing it before. So with so many of these landlords and real estate groups coming at it, the Supreme Court might end up ruling the opposite way. And I will point out, I don't know if you've all noticed this, but I try to stay abreast every once in a while of how the news media is talking about the eviction crisis. And there is a good amount of writing in newspapers around the country. Virtually all of what I've seen is very much on the side of small landlords and those sorts of things. I don't know to what extent there's coordination or if it's trade groups that are sort of like dispatching op-ed writers or whatever, but it really does seem to be slanted in that direction, Bridget.
Oh yeah, it wouldn't surprise, I mean, I don't know what's happening here, but I've noticed the exact same thing that you've noticed. And it wouldn't surprise me if there was a lot of behind the scenes gear shifting and wheel turning about, you know, like, oh, get your op-ed in the paper, here are your talking points. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And I think it's really interesting that kind of what they call mom and pop landlords have become the face of this crisis. And I just think that it would be better if we could broaden that conversation to include people who don't necessarily own property and like the reality that not every landlord is your mom and pop landlord. Like I've noticed the same thing that you've noticed.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't want the landlords to lose everything either. The whole point of the aid is supposed to be to clear it for both with an understanding of that these are unprecedented times. But I also don't think that like, oh, so you have a small, you've got a couple of small landlords that you're trying out. Oh, then I don't care about families, you know, being thrown on the streets. No, I still care. That does not go away. Now, it is still continuing. And so that's the most important part of this potentially. Princeton University's eviction lab found that more than 6,000 evictions were filed last week. Despite the moratorium, evictions are continuing for a multitude of reasons, such as inconsistent enforcement, courts interpreting the ban differently. God only knows how that works. It says you can't evict people. And some landlords actively ignoring the rules in the hopes their tenants won't notice, evicting them and hoping that people won't know that there is a ban on evictions. And so at multiple different levels, it is continuing, in some case, arguably accidentally, but it really does seem like a lot of self-interested actors at multiple different levels are pushing us in the direction of more evictions. And I want to focus just briefly on one more. So full details for this are available at tyt.com. Andy Hirschfeld is the writer who did some great research on this. The last time the eviction moratorium was about to end, we covered it day after day, and everybody's just pointing fingers at each other. Like the Biden administration's like, well, you know, I really think the CDC should do something, and like the legislature's like, I guess the Supreme Court will weigh in. The Supreme Court says, well, it shouldn't be the CDC; it should really be the legislature. Nobody seemed to want to act, and why is that? Well, it's complex. And everyone's motivations can be different, but Andy Hirschfeld has some great numbers here on why some of those involved in this process sure seem to be taking a hands-off approach. And so we're gonna jump ahead a bit on the graphics, apologies to the director, but Steny Hoyer, for instance, member of Democratic leadership, he took money from several Wall Street firms that have been buying up single family homes in the last year ahead of the looming eviction crisis. The firms include Vanguard, Goldman Sachs, Carlyle Group, and Invesco. He got $5,000 from Vanguard's PAC, the Vanguard Group Committee for Responsible Government, love that name, in the most recent election cycle. He took $5,000 from Goldman Sachs in 2020 and every year since 2007. In June, Bloomberg reported that Invesco pledged to invest $5 billion in a management group to buy 20,000 more single family homes over the next 3 years. Invesco gave Steny Hoyer $2,500 from their PAC back in March. He also took a combined $5,000 back in August of last year. And so look, Steny Hoyer is just one member technically of Congress, but he is a member of Democratic leadership. And we cannot pretend that it is just the small landlords that are interested in the eviction moratorium going away. There are some of the most wealthy individuals and corporations in this country that see it as a potential bonanza. Let thousands of people be thrown out of their homes or be desperate to be bought out of their mortgages, and they can make a killing and potentially kill people along the way. And so they have dispatched their representatives to push for that. So if we have another news cycle where everybody's pointing fingers at each other, this is gonna be one of the reasons behind that. Anyway, any more thoughts about all this?
No, I cannot recommend people read Andy Hirschfield's piece on TYT.com enough. I read it before we started in this interview and it was kind of mind blowing. And it really underscores the importance of following the money and making sure that our elected officials are really out there, you know, supporting the constituents that they're supposed to be supporting and not just taking money and, you know, kowtowing to corporate interests. So I cannot recommend that folks read that piece enough. It is mind blowing.
Exactly. Yeah, it was great work there. Okay, let's turn quickly to something very different. Okay, everything seems to be going well. Okay, cool. In the last election cycle, California, which is known for its ballot initiatives, had a number that were pretty objectionable that unfortunately went through largely due to a huge amount of money being spent on it. One of the worst was Prop 22, which effectively allowed companies like Uber and Lyft to continue to exploit their workforce and not give them the full status, rights, and benefits of full-time workers, even if they are fighting or working full-time. Now that might at least temporarily have ended because a California judge last Friday ruled that that ballot measure exempting rideshare and food delivery drivers from a state labor law is unconstitutional because it infringes on the legislature's power to set workplace standards, and it very much does. Now, in California, if a ballot initiative is rendered unconstitutional, it can't like readily be amended because it's a ballot initiative. The legislature can't just pick it up again. It would have to be amended and passed again during a future election, which means that as of right now it is unenforceable, which means in theory there is an opening for those companies to be approached perhaps by the legislature, perhaps by court cases to give the sorts of benefits they've been fighting giving. Give you a little bit more details from the judge. This is Judge Frank Rorsch, Alameda County Superior Court judge, wrote that Prop 22 is unconstitutional because it, quote, limits the power of a future legislature to define app-based drivers as workers subject to workers' compensations law. That makes the entire ballot measure unenforceable. By including language aimed at preventing drivers from unionizing, the ballot measure also violates a constitutional provision that requires laws and initiatives to be limited to a single subject. That I had not actually thought of, that it's fairly clever there. So look, this was really divisive, not just here in California, Bridget, but also because it appeared, and I think there's good reason to think this, that companies like Uber and Lyft and others were using this as a test run to see if they can have similar sorts of measures passed in other states or influence legislatures to enshrine it into actual law. So what do you think about this potentially being knocked down?
I mean, I think it's clear that that's what Uber and Lyft and these companies were doing, but it's just, I mean, just give your employees, they work for you, just give them benefits. Like The ways that I have seen these companies try to weasel out of just doing right by the people that make their, you know, their platforms run, just doing right by them in the most basic ways, they will do anything to avoid that accountability. And so, you know, I don't know if you've seen, I've been watching TV recently and I've seen these very slick Uber ads that are meant to be like, oh, our drivers, they have such great lives and like, you know, we treat them so well and like, yep. They will do anything other than just give their staff, their employees just benefits. Like, it is mind blowing to me.
Yeah. You know, we had, I don't often see commercials because I don't often watch live TV, but I think it was like, Sophie, I do literally mean because I'm better than everyone. No. I think I was like, I was trying to watch SNL live or something for a period. And so I would have multiple sections of commercials. And they, if you live in California, you know this, they're all about the ballot initiatives. And it was just, you know, a like statistically perfect, diverse set of rideshare drivers, all so happy to not have any insurance or rights or anything like that. And I get it, there might be some individuals that would prefer that. But it obviously wasn't what, like when you poll the actual rideshare workers at large, that was not what they actually thought. It was so insulting and offensive, those ads. But we saw them for week after week after week. Over $200 million ended up being spent on Prop 22. We have to keep our eye on it though, because, you know, this can be overturned by a judge. It can be picked up at a higher level. And if you're super confident the Supreme Court would not side with Uber and Lyft, That seems like a questionable way to approach the judiciary these days. But we will have to see. Maybe they'll sustain it. Maybe they just won't pick it up. There's a lot of people's livelihoods and quality of life that are on the line. Any closing thoughts?
No, I completely agree with you. And I do think like this is about people's livelihoods. And I know the way that these massive tech platforms will do anything if it means having to weasel out of accountability for the livelihoods of the people that really do fuel their businesses. And so I hope that, yeah. I'm really interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, me too, we'll see. Okay, with that, we are gonna take a short break. But when we come back, we have a real big mix of news. The actual penalties for a woman who committed a hate crime, we're gonna find out about those. And then the future of Jeopardy. So the thematic link is tenuous, but we're gonna deal with it after this. Okay, everyone, I'm gonna need you to hold on to your news butts because it's about to get rough. Okay. We're now finally finding out what is going to happen to an Iowa woman who way back in 2019 told police that she had purposefully ran over a girl because she was a Mexican. She pleaded guilty recently to federal hate crime charges. She had apparently been involved in the immediate run up to that attack in three separate racist incidents back in the month of December 2019. So let's run through a few of those. Footage from the Des Moines Police Department shows this is Nicole Marie Poole Franklin intentionally ran over the leg of a 12-year-old boy who was black and fled. The boy was walking along the curb of a Des Moines apartment parking lot when an SUV jumped the curb, ran over his leg and fled. A witness told police the SUV gunned its engine before the driver struck the child and that she'd seen the driver in the complex before. Shockingly, the boy's injuries were minor. They sound horrifying, but they were minor. About an hour later, she ran over Natalia Miranda, who was 14 at the time, as she walked to a basketball game. This was the incident that made national headlines because upon her arrest, Poole Franklin told police she hit the girl because she was a Mexican. Poole Franklin then, quote, made a series of derogatory statements about Latinos. An hour and a half after she hit Natalia Miranda, West Des Moines police said Poole Franklin used racist slurs towards a clerk and customers at a convenience store and threw items at the clerk. She pleaded guilty to two federal hate crime charges back in April and was sentenced to 304 months by a federal judge. This sentence will run concurrent to a 17 and a half year sentence that Franklin received April 19th on related state charges of attempted murder. And so she could be spending effectively something like 25 years in prison for what isn't just a hate crime, but it is a rampage of hate crimes.
Yeah.
Bridget, what are your thoughts?
It's a rampage of hate crimes against babies, children. I mean, one of the, that boy was just 12 years old. And I think it's not a surprise to me that her ire was focused on our kids, you know, like, mm-hmm. I think that's terrifying what she did. And I also think it really does go back to this idea of things like hate speech, things like identity-based hate and attacks. These things may start online, but they almost never stay online. And so, you know, there it's not a very difficult line for me to draw from the kinds of, you know, very hateful rhetoric that we see from folks like Donald Trump and folks on the extreme right and things yeah. that fester online with this kind of, you know, in real life rampage of hate. So it really is. That's my heart goes out to all the kids and folks that she, you know, attacked.
Yeah, I mean, look, thankfully the boy was lucky enough to get out with just minor injuries, but I mean, those are the physical ones. I can't really imagine. I could try to imagine. What would you think for the rest of your life? Like, are you gonna feel comfortable walking on the side of the road? What are you gonna think about traffic? Are you gonna wanna live in dense urban areas where there's a lot of like road noise? Like, how traumatized could you be wondering if some crazed racist is just gonna throw their vehicle onto a sidewalk to try to kill you? Like, the physical injuries almost seem smaller than what have to be the psychological injuries. I don't know. There's no statements from the child. We don't know in the past 2 years. Obviously, it's been a rough 2 years since December 2019. I don't know exactly, but I can speculate that it's gotta be pretty rough, Bridget.
Oh yeah, I as I said, my heart breaks for these kids. And again, I think it goes to show what happens when we tolerate and amplify and platform hate and really try to legitimize it. I think that, like, it's not surprising to me that this happened. And I think until we get a handle on things like that, I wouldn't be surprised to see more of these kinds of attacks. And I think it really just goes to show the real danger inherent in this kind of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like, how could you ever trust her out in public again? Like, that multiple attempted murders of random people. Like, look, there's a lot of scary types of crime, obviously. But someone who just wants to go around killing random people they find, I don't know, feels to me like one of the scariest.
Oh,
like being willing to employ a vehicle to do that, to target children in particular. Like, this case almost seems tailor-made to be as horrifying as attempted. Like, thankfully, nobody died. That's the most shocking thing when she's targeting children, but really scary stuff.
Yeah, she's a menace.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she's paying the price for it. Okay, with that, we are very much going to mix things up. So let's launch into that. Oh, we don't have a, okay, well, let's launch it up. Oh yeah, no, I just noticed that on the side there. Apologies, this is my fault and you're all now suffering for it. Anyway, it has been quite a saga to replace Alex Trebek as the head of Jeopardy. And this isn't normally the sort of thing that we would talk about on a show like The Damage Report, but they've made some weird choices. And so they had chosen Mike Richards, the former EP, after this like long drawn out process of all of these guest hosts. That turned out to be a terrible idea. And he stepped down last Friday after it was revealed that he had made a bunch of offensive and sexist comments on a podcast before. They were shown, the podcast was The Random Show. That was his podcast apparently back in the day. In a 2013 episode, Mr. Richards joked about women who dress like a hooker on Halloween. In another episode, he called his female co-host a booth slut because she once worked as a model at a consumer show in Las Vegas. He described women who wear one-piece swimsuits as looking really frumpy and overweight and referred to stereotypes about Jews and large noses. There's just a lot of different stuff. It wasn't that long ago, honestly. Anyway, at the time he made those comments, he was serving as executive producer of The Price is Right. And the ADL called for an investigation. Sony said that Mr. Richards would remain as executive producer, I guess. That's interesting. Anyway, so what does that leave us with? Well, he was not the only person that was sort of elevated as a result of this property. On Jeopardy, I get it. Thank you. So actress Mayim Bialik, who is already slated to host their primetime specials and spinoffs that had already been announced, will now serve as the guest host of the next 15 episodes of Jeopardy. That was what Sony announced. And there will be more guest hosts who will be announced as the season continues. So that leaves us wondering, Bridget, who are they actually going to bring in as the full-time host? So we're going to talk about this in one moment, but I want to let people know that we do have a poll. So if you go to tyt.com/polls, who do you think it will be? These are as many options as we can give you. We apologize. Is it going to be LeVar Burton? Will Mayim Bialik be raised up to full host of all of it? You have Laura Coates, who a lot has come out indicating that Alex Trebek apparently wanted her to be the successor. Will it be Ben Mankiewicz, the guy who I keep boosting for the show, even though the only times he interacts with me online is to own me over something? But he does really love Jeopardy and he has for a long time, and he'd be a great host. Or will it be someone else? So go to tyt.com/poll. We will give you the results at some point. But Bridget, what are you thinking about this? Are you shocked that he stepped down? So did you expect it would be Mike Richards? Who do you want it to be now? What do you think?
No, of course. I mean, like, who had ever heard of Mike Richards before? Like, right? Like, I feel like we had been given this handful of like very interesting, good, you know, people to be host. And basically, it's like when your company puts out a job application and then they're like, oh, you're just gonna hire from within. It was like, who had ever heard of him? And, you know, I read this really long, this in-depth long read about Jeopardy and Mike Richards, and you didn't even scratch the surface of all the ways that this person was not a good fit for this role. It really sounds like he almost kind of rigged the process against folks like Ken Jennings and LeVar Burton so that he would have a better shot to be the host. When this was first announced, I was like, oh, it's gotta be LeVar Burton. Who else could it be? Fan favorite, like who else could it be? Mm-hmm. Now I'm kind of thinking maybe Ken Jennings. I don't know. Think about this. LeVar Burton has a lot to his name, right? There's so much that he has done from Star Trek to Roots, Reading Rainbow. He is like a powerhouse. Ken Jennings is really only someone who we know because of Jeopardy, right? Like that's his whole thing. And so I don't know, I kind of go back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's obviously like, he's huge in Jeopardy lore, like the canon of Jeopardy. That's totally true. Obviously I'm biased. I know Ben. If he wasn't on the list, I know there's something that seems perfect about LeVar Burton hosting it. Like, as kids, he got us to want to read. Now as adults, he'll be making us still care about knowing things. That sort of just seems balanced in a way. And I don't know, he just seems to really want it. And I love, look, I'm you know, a big Star Trek fan. So like, I love LeVar Burton for a long time. So I don't know, that seems sort of perfect. But it is possible they'll go with Laura Coates, because, you know, as I said, more has come out. Mayim Bialik was already being elevated, as people are pointing out, she has a PhD in that. I am gonna throw one little curveball in though. So this is something I read right before going live. Grains of salt and all that. Timing wise though, some of Mayim Bialik's previous comments about vaccines have now resurfaced. So let's see, she wrote a New York Times op-ed back in 2017. Let's see, she says she has been fully vaccinated for the COVID-19 virus and is not at all an anti-vaxxer. In 2009, she told People that she was part of a non-vaccinating family. In 2012, she posted an article titled "Vaccinations and Other Things I Don't Want to Discuss" for a website. In a 2015 tweet, she said that her children were vaccinated. She posted a video in October 2020 saying that she had delayed vaccinations for reasons you don't necessarily get to know about. She had at one point said there are way too many vaccines and there are a lot of questions about the vaccine industry, which, look, I get it. If you question Big Pharma, I understand that in some level. So look, she's very clear. I support the COVID-19 vaccine. Previous commentary, which I sort of vaguely remember anyway, is out there. So this is hardly a time where that will help her though. Do you think that'll matter? Quick final thoughts.
Oh, I mean, don't they vet these people? You know, it's like, nobody wants to be platforming someone who has been expressing this kind of stuff about vaccines. I mean, it's just not great timing for her. Oof.
I know. Now she's good on this vaccine. Is that enough? Maybe, I don't know. Remember, it used to be like a kind of like Santa Monica liberal thing to be against vaccines. Now it's like this hard right thing. Anyway, we will have to see. tyt.com/polls. We'll give you the results soon. I don't know what direction they're going to go in. I assume they're going to be a little bit more careful in this case, but who knows? One would think you could have expectations of jeopardy, but maybe not. Anyway, those results will be coming up soon. That is unfortunately all the time we have for our first linear hour. So if you've been watching on one of those platforms, thank you very much for watching. But if you're on Twitch or if you're on YouTube, on the members app, we do have more news coming. So we're gonna take a short break, but stick around, a lot more after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.